The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls are here. And Stephen, I'm feeling a bit Nick-ish.
Wow, I don't even know what to do. I'm seeing double. It's like, how can I tell who's talking?
Yes, well, we're very excited to have here the man who was, for our money, the breakout star from the male side of things on Australian Survivor this season. Please welcome our good friend and honorary Australian Survivor Know-It-All, Nick Iadanza, to talk about the finale. Nick, how are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for having me, guys. This is a lifelong dream come true. So,
yeah,
just ticking them off this year.
Well, so many Australians had their lifelong dreams come true this week, Stephen.
Yeah. Finally, the fan favorite, big story this week. Big, outrageous story. We're here to call Nick to task for his terrible, terrible vote and force him to explain himself for a disappointing history.
Yeah, so congratulations are in order to Christy. Job well done.
Yes,
winning.
No, a job done.
Yeah, and congratulations to all of the viewers who finished Australian Survivor, Nick.
Yeah. They survived. They made it an arduous 55 days, an unnecessary 55 days, but they made it all the same.
They made it through. So lots of fun stuff. We're going to take your questions, hashtag RHAP. We've got some email questions. We're going to talk through the finale. We got questions for Nick and a lot of stuff to work through. And Stephen, I know you've been especially fired up waiting to talk about Australian Survivor all week long.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of chilled out a little bit, as one does about reality shows. You know, like in the moment, you're just enraged. And then like the day later, you're like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember what happened there. So, you know, hopefully I can have a I was legitimately angry. Like, my girlfriend came home and she's like, you seem like you're in a bad mood. I was like, no, I'm fine. Nothing's wrong. Just to have invested that much time in something and to have such an anticlimax. Now, I think a lot of people, I think there's a lot to be said, obviously, for Christy's final tribal council. I think everyone acknowledges it was really good. Obviously, we'll talk about that. There's a lot of people who are obviously rooting for her and are probably very happy with this end. You know, we certainly saw a lot of big Christy fans, although you and I suspected, and I think suspected correctly, that people were spoiled.
Yeah, that from the point around around the time like Nick went out in the game, that Stephen and I started being peppered from Christy truthers who were out there, who every time we said anything that was potentially a wrong move for Christy, we got a lot of very cryptic, you guys are so stupid.
Man, you'll see.
You don't know anything. You'll see. You guys are such a-holes, and you'll see. The truth will come out.
Yeah, there was a lot of that around the time. I reckon, from the merge onwards, it really started to ramp up, and was trying to figure out the difference between the people who maybe had been spoiled or the people who were reading the edit or the people who genuinely believed that she should have won. So it was tricky for us as well, trying to sort out the truth.
Well, and it's interesting because, like, from a game perspective, there was no reason to think Christy would make it to the end and certainly not win. She was obviously a huge target coming in off of Vow, right? Vow, and then didn't seem to really be making any dynamic moves to kind of change that position. So,
but see, that's the thing. I don't know if she was a huge target coming in. It's like that classic, the larger group just goes straight up against each other. And then anyone who you think was a target because of their position in their previous tribe slides right underneath that first bit. She definitely made moves, but at that first bit, at that merge, she wasn't the target at all.
All right, let's try to see if we can talk through some of this today, because again, I thought it was a very dramatic performance in the final tribal council and a very dramatic episode all the way around. Yeah. Probably one of the better Survivor finales that there ever were.
Really, oh my gosh, that challenge was unbelievable.
Yeah, super iconic. Nice touch to have the family members there for that.
I want to talk about, because I thought that was like a real, I mean, I guess that is a nice touch, but it was like, that makes it so much more distracting.
Yeah. But I did feel like in the case of Christy, I did feel like that she drew from that more so than Lee was able to. And she really got the momentum. And then I really like that touch at the end with the bringing all of the family in at that final tribal council. I mean, that was a beautiful moment, Nick.
Yeah, it was. That's something that we've done here before, an Australian reality TV show with MasterChef. It's very common to have the family come in for that big final reveal. And I'm surprised they did it, but I think it was good. I thought it was really nice. I can only imagine how amazing it would have been to have my dad and my fiance, you know, hand on each shoulder during that moment. So we were all so happy. I think the first thing that ran through my mind was, Lee's kids didn't hear what I just said, did they? And luckily they were in lockdown. But it was nice to have them there.
Stephen, how much did you want to have your family there with you at the final tribal council in Tocantins?
Well, JT had all his like seven young'uns that he would have had. So it really would not have helped me for like, you know, he's got his like, you know, young'uns playing the banjo and my, you know, Dr. Dad comes in. I don't think that's going to help my case.
All right. So let's just start to try to put some perspective on the Christy storyline, because I think there's really two ways to look at this in terms of, I guess, how much do we buy the narrative of that? Here is Christy. She had a plan this entire time through all 55 days that she was the person who by design was behind the scenes. She said some interesting things about, hey, you know, you guys all wanted to vote for somebody who made a big move. Well, I noticed everybody who made a big move went home. There were 20 tribal councils. I knew who was going home every single time. And this was by design how I got here. Stephen, did you agree with or did you reject that idea from Christy?
You know, throughout the entire season, we'd seen these confessionals from Christy where she would just like sort of like say in this frantic way, like, I am really controlling everything by doing nothing. And I felt like her final tribal was a little bit more of that. It's like, you know, I think she was very eloquent. I think she made a really strong case. But was that case really backed up by the facts? Like, is she really, you know, it looked to me at the final five. And again, like we got to talk into this, dig into this a little more, that she made one of the worst decisions in the history of the show by agreeing to go with Lee and Elle at that final five, where short of a miracle, she is out in third place. You know, that miracle happens and then she's there. And for her to say like, oh yes, this was my plan all along, was to have a miracle happen. You know, like that's, it doesn't ring really true for me. Now, the other, you know, on the other hand, the fact that she did vote with, it's not like she was out of the majority. The fact that she did know who was going home, the fact that she was voting with the majority every time, you know, it wasn't like she was just sort of floating along voting with whomever. She really was part of it. So I'm really curious to hear Nick's perspective. I do want to give one third hand, though, which is that part of the reason that the people who made big moves went home was because of Christy. You know, it was because Christy wasn't willing to make big moves. You know, it was like you saw every week Jenna Lewis or I mean, I don't even remember at what point it was true, but like there was a point where there were enough numbers to flip on that majority alliance from the bottom, and they just were all too terrified to do it. And so like that could have happened, you know.
And if I could add one more thing, there was one tribal council where Christy did not know who was going to go home.
Oh, which one?
And it was the one in which Sue got voted onto Sinapu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the tribal council where Christy was going to be blindsided and sent out of the game before Connor, before Kate. And by the grace of a twist, which made no sense whatsoever, that was where her game was spared that night. She did not know who was going home that night. That was going to be a total blindside of Christy. And then only by the grace of production interference on that night, then she ultimately caught wind of what Phoebe was trying to do and then flipped on Phoebe. So, all right, with all that loaded up, Nick, then talk to us about why Christy was the winner.
Well, speaking to that point, as someone who was saved by the grace of a production twist on day 12, like that's a, I don't know if you can hold that against her. That's
I don't
that's
hold it against something. Her except for that she says, I knew what was happening every step of the way. And that was a major point when she did not know what was happening that time.
So my thoughts on that is I give Christy a lot of credit. I think she played really well. And I do think that of the final two, I think that she did deserve to win. I don't buy into the idea that she knew what was happening the whole time. I really don't. And I've said this to her as well, that I think that there were times when she didn't, and there were times when she did. To say that you knew what was happening every step of the way is no one knew that. Even someone like Elle, who was in control the whole game, I think that's even a reach for her. So I didn't award my vote based on that. At that point when she said that, I was like, all right, Christy, maybe settle down. Like, let's not go nuts here. But the rest of the stuff, I do believe that she did earn her spot at the end. I think that what's important is that Christy figured out how to play in our season. And she did something that I certainly didn't do. And that was to take into account what were other people on the show valuing. And they weren't valuing people who made these big outrageous moves. You saw what happened to everyone who tried. And in her estimation, she gathered the facts and she made her moves accordingly. And to do that and still be in the majority, it's pretty good. That's pretty good. To me, that's deserving of understanding the strategy of the season.
That's a really great point, which is that, like, every season, you know, what people value changes based on who's playing that season, you know?
Absolutely.
And you've got to play that game to win. But what would you say that was?
Well, so I went into the game with a season 33 perspective in my mind. I've seen it all, you know, like all super fans, we've watched it. We think we know what to expect. So I went in thinking that this was American Survivor. I didn't realize that I would be stuck with people who hadn't seen the show before. And beyond that, really valued all the things which in my mind are diametrically opposed to what you're supposed to do when you play Survivor. And so I never course corrected. I tried, but I didn't do it enough. She did. She really did. She saw what was happening. She pandered to the people who were feeding this drama of mateship, loyalty, honor. And in some ways, you saw her when she was kind of morally conflicted about who to vote for when she went and told Lee. She appealed to the things that were important to Lee as well. And it set her up into a really good position.
How do you justify that final five move? Because to me, it seemed like not that this was someone who was playing the game according to the rules that were handed to her, but someone that wasn't playing at all. And someone who was letting Lee make her decisions, and someone who was being presented with opportunities to take the game into her hands, most notably at the final five, to a lesser extent at the final four, and even, you know, at the final six, which is three consecutive votes where a really strong case could be made that this is your opportunity to take control of this game. And she each single time refused to take control of the game.
Yeah, I think that she shouldn't have flipped at the final four. I also think she shouldn't have flipped earlier. It was around that 6-5 where I thought I think that she should have. And yes, we talk about the Eliza Orlins, you know, results orientated thing. In the end, it all worked out for her. But, you know, I didn't understand it at the time. I really didn't. And do I still understand it now? I don't think so. You saw us on the jury. We were literally falling over. Just like, what the hell? But one of the things I do believe, and this is something that I've learned since playing Survivor, is that there is something to be said for backing yourself. And I don't know if that translates idiomatically in America. Backing yourself is like believing in yourself and saying, do you know what? I actually can
do
this.
I saw a banner like that once.
A bit worse for wear nowadays, isn't it? Yeah. Believe in yourself.
Sorry, Stevie, that's a reference for Survivor fans.
Old school Survivor fan. Yeah.
Yes.
So as someone who went into the game thinking at every single opportunity, you need to make sure that you are making the path as easy for yourself as possible, I really respected that, like, she did believe in herself that she could do it. I never would have backed myself to go up against Elton Lee. It's suicide. But she believed that she could do it. And she did.
Yeah, but
she
believe I can climb Everest. If I somehow make it, you know, to the top of Everest because I'm airlifted there by a helicopter, I didn't climb Everest, you know, like I was airlifted there.
But in some ways.
Yeah, that's not fair. That's not fair. I mean, I do think that she really did garner support because she did call her shot also. Yes, that she was also like, even at the final four tribal council, she would, and I had been spoiled on the finale by the time I had gotten to watch it, when she's like, okay, you'll see. Everybody was like, well, you've never won a challenge before. She's like, well, I'm going to win this one. And she believed that she was going to do it. And then when she shows up wearing the necklace, I think you guys are all falling over yourselves.
We,
So
we were just, some people were cracking up laughing, not at her, but just at the situation about how ridiculous it was that she had actually won.
And to be fair, it's not like she, you know, it's not like she won by some fluke. Like this was like a challenge perfectly tailored to her. Like she won a grueling, terrible, iconic Survivor challenge and really outlasted Lionel.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said for wanting it more. Yeah. I really do. Like, and not that Lee didn't want to. I know he did, but it's that fire that was started burning in her 16 years ago, and she knew when she had to kind of let that fire take over. And as someone who is in the same situation, you're holding on. If you want it enough, you can get it. And she just wanted it more.
Yeah. Nick, what I want to know is how much was that final tribal council a quote unquote live tribal in that? When you guys went into it, were you guys very much all up in the air, or had it been sort of predetermined before you guys left the Ponderosa that, okay, Christy, can you believe it? She's going to be the winner.
No, that was a completely live tribal.
Really?
That's the first one that I can say is actually a live tribal.
Interesting.
This season, everything was decided well beforehand. And people went in, you know, I, for one, went in with the idea to vote for Lee. My plan was to, you know, speak my mind at the question, get the answers that I wanted. But I thought that, you know what, 60%, I'm going to vote for Lee. 40%, I'm going to vote for Christy. But I'm open because there was no clear-cut winner. Now, if Elle had made it at the end against either of them, she would have won in a 9-0 landslide. She really would have. As soon as Elle was voted out, it became live from that moment. From that moment, everyone was just scratching their heads going, all right, what do we do?
Well, so from my perspective as a viewer, like Lee, and maybe it's just my bias, but I thought Lee played a great game. You know, like
he did.
He was fantastic in the challenges. You know, you say Christy voted in the majority. Well, Lee was the majority. And then most impressively of all, you know, Lee was able to consistently mind F Christy, you know, at that final five, at that final four, where it made real sense for Christy to flip. Christy had, in fact, at the final five decided to flip. You know, she went and sat L down and was like, I'm voting you out. And then Lee is able to take control of that situation. And when he is at his most vulnerable, change the vote. To me, those are the moments of real strategy, right? That's what being a good Survivor player is about, is not some big twist or a challenge win or playing an idol, but yeah. I'm in the minority. I'm about to get screwed. Can I change that crucial swing vote's decision to go with me? And Lee did that in what I thought was a really impressive way.
See, I interpret that a little bit differently. I interpret that as Elle and Lee doing that together. And if not, and yes, Lee had a much better relationship with Christy, but Elle did a lot of the legwork in the game, in the alliance. And Elle was severely undercredited for that in the edit. And while Christy did defer to Lee a lot, I do think that was born out of a desire for Elle to kind of start the process and then he kind of finished it off. And I just think that for someone like Lee deferred a lot to Elle. He really, really did. I remember having strategic conversations earlier on with him and he would say, just speak to Elle, whatever she says goes. Now, good strategy, got him to the end, but it doesn't garner enough respect from me than for someone who deserves a game. Now, the other thing, which adds another layer on top of that, is the fact that if you were to say to him, look, you're controlling and strategically manipulating Christy, well done, he would be very adverse to listening to that and say, no, I'm just doing it because I'm her friend, I'm her mate, I'm looking out for her. And it's like, you need to own your strategy. And even at the final tribal council, he didn't own that part of it. And if he had, I think he would have got a few more votes.
Yeah, to me, I felt like that just trying to put this in perspective of American Survivor, there were two different tribal councils that I was thinking about where I do feel like that Lee, in a lot of ways, was like a South Pacific coach where he did a really good job throughout the whole game. But then when it came down to talking in front of the jury, and I'm sure Matt can relate to this, I always say it's like a magician and now it's time to show them how you pulled off the trick. And he went back to talking about, like, I played this game with honesty and loyalty and integrity. Yeah. And I did it the whole way. I proved that you could play the game this way. And everybody that's sitting there on the jury, I'm sure, is sitting there like, no, you didn't. You were such a hypocrite because you got us out for and you schemed against us for and you shamed us for scheming. And I think that was the kind of thing. And I feel like in some ways there was also a bit of the Samoa final tribal council in this as well, because I feel like that the people who went to that final tribal council didn't go there intending to vote for Natalie. They were going to vote for Russell probably no matter what, but they were going to vote for Mick. But, you know, Natalie started to give them a narrative and then they started to feel good about this. And like, you know what? I could see myself voting for this person. And I think that that's the thing that you can get in the final tribal council where somebody's like really got a good rap down. And then everybody's like, oh, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, why not? Let's go for this.
Yeah, I see the comparison to Natalie in terms of her giving a narrative that we felt good about. I don't see the coach comparison so much because, in for all intents and purposes, coach was the figurehead of that alliance, and and I don't see that Lee ever was. He never was the figurehead of that alliance. He was just a cog in that machine, a very strong, well constructed machine. That he was just the cog.
Why was Christy so much better at that final tribal than we've seen her all season? Like, what changed in her? Because, or was she like that and it just didn't make the show? Like, from my perspective, you know, throughout the show, she's always like a little bit frantic and on edge and paranoid, even in confessionals when, right, theoretically you're at your most relaxed, like, you know, you're just chatting with a producer, you're having fun. At that final tribal, which is typically like the most stressful, terrifying moment, she seemed so lucid and in control.
Well, I think that there is the biggest piece of evidence that proves that maybe she was in control the whole game and maybe she did know what she was doing, because in bit of inside story for you, I went in with a question for Christy, which was based completely on the fact that she doesn't know how to articulate herself.
Yeah.
It was this whole spiel about, I'm a teacher of English and I teach my students how to, you know, I had this whole thing. Then she started talking. I had to change my question completely on the fly because she was so articulate. She did not miss a beat that night.
Yeah.
And that kind of shows to me that maybe she did know that when the game was playing and there are people like Sam and I going up against it and there are people like Flick and Brooke going up against it, that the best thing to do is lay low and turn it on when you really need it. I think that's the most compelling piece of evidence.
There was no evidence that that was her strategy. There's no confessionals from early in the season of, boy, I came into this game with one idea on how to play, and now I'm going to change up my game plan because I'm noticing something that's going on. She never told us that that was going to be the case the whole way through. And even go back to the final six when she has that meltdown at camp and is just spilling her guts to Lee at that point in time. You cannot tell me that there was this amazing agency that she had throughout 55 days that now she is suddenly revealing to us at this point in time, Nick.
I don't, and I didn't vote for her because of that, but I think if you had to point to one piece of evidence to prove that she was in control the whole time of her game, it's that part there, that she had been so invisible in the discussion and all of a sudden she has the ability to articulate herself. To me, that's a huge piece of evidence.
I don't know. I mean, it's also possible that the paranoia and stress of the game like really affected her in a way where after she was done, you know, on that day 39, 55, you know, which Rob, you've never had the chance to experience, but it's really wonderful. All of that paranoia really.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with not reaching it.
I mean, I guess I'll never reach day 55. Although I actually have had
you don't want it. You don't want it. Trust me.
You know, you maybe like some people get so affected by that paranoia that it really shuts them down, and maybe that she just opened up. I'm saying, you know, I think of like Abby Maria, who, you know, is like a totally different person in the game and out of the game. Maybe just out of the game, she's a delight.
Is that your experience, Nick? Like in talking to Christy outside of the game, which Christy do you see?
I see Final Tribal Christy for sure. Definitely. And people that went through the audition process with her saw that during the audition process as well. So, yeah, and that was one of the discussions that we had out there, that it was quite interesting that she was different to how she presented herself originally. And that also, I think, speaks to the idea.
I'm just wondering, where is the evidence of this in the show, though? Is she one of these people where it's like, well, I didn't want to tell production that that's what I was doing?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think that's part of it. To be honest, I lived with her for 6 days, and the Christy that I saw in personally when you would chat with her was Final Tribal Christy. The Christy that you would see in group conversations and in strategy, and when we were standing in front of, you know, Jonathan, et cetera, and sitting at Tribal, was the Christy that she presented to everyone. So she did have this two speeds to her, because I saw it firsthand. Granted, nowhere near as much as everyone else, And but I did see
well,
it.
You're saying,
but again, look, I don't want to give Christy too much credit because I do like her. I do think she played a good game at the game that won in our season. But I do think Lee played as well. So it's hard. It's this toss up, and I feel I definitely know I made the right decision now. But I was very torn when
but
I.
You're
was
being diplomatic sure. because you're friends with all these people. You know, like give us the real dirt.
Have you ever known me to be diplomatic? I don't really do diplomacy that well.
Yeah. Let's just talk through a couple more things from the finale week. We talked through that final five vote. Nick, have you had a chance to watch American Survivor yet this week? We're not spoiling anything for our Australian viewers.
No.
Because it was very interesting to me that we had a very parallel situation going on in the US Survivor where Adam was in that same situation where Christy was in, where you had on one side a showmance and then on the other side a strategic pair. And Adam has been widely applauded for his decision to vote against the pair, making the opposite move, which Christy made this week.
And also and, at the final 16 and not the final five.
Yeah. So do you think that changed that season?
Yeah. The fact that, it's a huge change. I mean, it makes it much worse, right? Like Adam is making a bold, aggressive decision at the final 16, probably the right move there. You know, at the final five, it would be a no-brainer to go with the non-romantic. Well, I mean, actually, slightly different in that case. Because final three versus final two, right? So that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think that the difference is that the showmance in Millennials Gen X is the least likely to win, whereas in Australian Survivor, the showmance was the most likely to win.
Yeah.
So I don't really I don't know. Like we like what Adam did because people don't like Figgy and Taylor, but does it make long term sense to want to bring Ken and Jess, who seem quite likable and quite strategic and smart and fit? Yeah. I don't know. I would like to sit next to Figgy and Taylor.
Now, Nick, do you have any comments on the rumors from this past week that Lee actually got a woman pregnant before Australian Survivor and that is one of the reasons why Elle does not want to see him anymore? Is that confirmed?
Are you going to have Elle on the show sinking beers and dropping truth bombs like Figgy? No, I don't. I think that we've got Elle and Lee are the genuine article as opposed to Figgy and
I heard that they're not a couple. I heard they just spoon and it's not romantic.
No, they are. They're together now. They've come out and said that they are. It didn't happen on the island. It's all above board. But as someone who slept next to them, yes.
Why wouldn't Lee just admit that they were a couple?
Because they weren't a couple at that time. They really weren't. And nothing happened on the island. And I think that they were both very much in control of keeping that under wraps. Visibly, it was very like the optics of it. They were very much a couple anyway. It just they didn't have the language.
Did you get the sense that the production really wanted Lee to win? Were they like, guys, come on, you should vote for Lee?
No, I don't get the sense of that. But what I get the sense is that the show was really jamming this idea of mateship down our throats all the way from the beginning. And no one personifies that more, in my opinion, than Lee.
I mean, I don't want to blow up your spot. But one thing I thought you said was interesting was the idea of crowning a winner that would then serve sort of to define the ethos of Australian Survivor moving forward.
Yeah, that was a big thing that I took into account. Like, I want to kind of set the tenor for how Survivor was going to be played in the future and what will and will not be rewarded. And I just don't know if I wanted the idea of, you know, trust, honesty, loyalty, mateship, all that stuff to be what people see going into season two and go, oh, cool, I can do that and I can win that way. Because I just don't know if that's Survivor the way that the fans and myself and other strategists want it to be played. That's not the core tenet of Survivor. The core tenet is strategy. And I wanted someone who at least was able to defend their strategy and owned up to having some sort of strategy. That's the big thing. You know, people argue that Lee didn't have strategy. People argue that Christy didn't have strategy. And while they both did, I feel that Christy owned it more.
Right.
And she sets a better precedent going forward.
One of the things I thought was pretty interesting was at the final four episode, episode 25 from this week, we got a lot of talk about this idea of the 2-2 tie and the idea of going to the fire making challenge. Christy seemed very upset at the point where Flick wanted to learn how to make fire, but I did not really understand why Christy got so upset about this because that wouldn't the perfect scenario where Flick ends up making fire be where Flick and Christy are voting together against the pair. And at that point, where Christy seemingly had nothing to lose with this idea of, okay, let's just go. If they're going to try to vote out Flick, let's put our votes on Lee in this. Who had immunity? Lee or L? L did, right?
L did.
Yeah. I thought the point was that she was worried that she was going to convince, which you know, Flick at one point tried to do, convince Lee and L to split the vote so that Christy
that's why she was so
unfathomable that Flick like or L cast like a nasty vote against Flick for no reason at the final five.
Yeah.
It seems almost unimaginable that Flick would be able to get L to vote with her at the final four against Christy.
The thing is that Flick and L were very much close. They were so close the entire time. And that's something that didn't really come across on the show. It's always seemed like it was a three with L, Brooke, and Flick. But L was much closer to Flick than she ever was to Christy.
Mm-hmm.
And really? In Christy's mind, that would have been a genuine concern.
What about, so was L closer, I'm sorry, was Flick closer to L than she was to Brooke? Like, you know, give us a little bit of insight into that, because that was really the big move of the season.
Yeah, I think I can boil it down pretty simply in the fact that Brooke and Flick were really good friends, but then L arrived and Flick looked up to L as an older sister. And I think that is a very different dynamic between someone who you look up to as a sister, as a family member, as opposed to someone who you enjoy their company as a friend.
Yeah.
And therein lies the difference. And that's a huge difference. And that speaks to Elle's ability, because Elle was such a good player. She really was. She was so severely under-edited. She was someone who made everyone feel completely comfortable. And she did it with Flick, and she got Flick to turn on someone who she said she would never turn on.
Yeah, so explain that a little bit. Like, what made Elle such a good player?
Elle just had this ability that you just felt comfortable around her. And, you know, we speak about why Michelle won in Korong, this ability of a social player. And it wasn't just the social. She had everything. Elle was also someone who fit in both camps. She had an understanding of honor and mateship and friendship and loyalty, but she also knew when to turn that off and speak strategically and talk about cutting people and blindsiding and getting to the end. And that makes that feeling of honor and mateship much more palatable for someone like me who was on the receiving end of the negative sides of that. So she was able to kind of straddle two lines, as well as being a highly physical player and being someone that people just genuinely liked having around.
Let's talk about like Flick and Christy's decision to tell Elle about voting her out. Is that has to be one of the dumbest and obviously, you know, well, you know, it worked out from Christy's perspective, but from Flick's perspective, that was her game losing mistake.
Yeah, but I understand why Flick did it. I think so. What Flick was looking at there is she was saying, well, they're going to speak to Christy anyway. And Christy is highly volatile in terms of being persuaded by Lee and Elle. So her idea there is to bring herself into the conversation, and so that way she can at least manage it a little bit more. Now, she did a really poor job of managing it because Elle absolutely wiped the floor with her. But the idea was that if I sit here with her, the conversation that I know will happen in 10 minutes can at least be under my watch.
Oh man,
she just didn't do enough.
That was my hypothesis for it. I'm so pleased with myself.
On the money.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Just to go back to that final five, where if Christy votes correctly, and again, this is definitely into the results-based thinking in terms of how this ultimately, like we're all in agreement here, this was the wrong move, correct?
At the final five?
Okay. I just want to be clear about that, because people will, we will get comments like, well, how could it be the wrong move if she won? So if at that point where she goes with the final three of Matt and Flick at that point, obviously L is going to win immunity at four. So that certainly muddies things. Nick, how do you think the season ultimately plays out if they decide to vote off Lee at the final five? Or I guess Elle would have been voted off at the final five and she would have been gone to not have it. So hypothetically, let's just say the final three was Matt and Christy and Flick.
Christy wouldn't have won.
Interesting. Who would she have taken if she's there at final three. So she would have taken who to the end, either Matt or Flick.
I don't think she would have beaten either, to be honest.
Really?
I really don't. I would have voted for either of the other two over Christy.
Who would she have taken?
I think that she would have taken Flick, because I think that Flick would have had a difficult time convincing people to give her credit, even though she deserved the credit. And I think that in that situation, maybe Matt would have won out of that final three. But I think that strategy-wise, I would have voted for Flick. Personality-wise, I would have voted for Matt.
Would Flick have been able to get enough other votes, though? Like, I would have imagined she could have had a really bitter jury.
Yeah, I think that Flick was pushing it up a hill maybe against a few of those people. Now, if Flick went up against Lee, I do think that Flick would have won.
Oh, wow. I thought Flick was really good.
Flick was really good. And I think that the thing was that no one spoke in the jury and was like, oh, we've got to vote for this person. None of it. It really wasn't. Wow. And I can say that honestly. No, it wasn't. People took it really seriously. But what people did say, what people were saying, this is the type of player I want to reward. And that type of player was strategic.
Oh,
every single person wanted to award a strategic player.
Even Sam?
And I do think that this whole idea of mateship, just everyone was so over it. Everyone was so over it. We had nearly 50 days of having it beaten over our heads by contestants, by the show. And I don't see a scenario where that would have been rewarded over someone who'd made moves like.
Were you losing your time, your mind at the jury? How long were you in the jury villa? For like 3 weeks, right?
18 days of the game and then another couple of days afterwards, yeah.
How, were you going crazy?
At first I was like, this is great. This is going to be a holiday. I can read books. So by day 18, I was scaling the walls. Like I just wanted to get out of that compound. So
I think that's about how long, though, the first juror is there from American Survivor typically. So it's not unreasonable. Actually, that may be shorter than the typical first juror.
I think the hard thing about being the first juror is you hear everyone's event of the story and every person's event is so different. And you just have to sit back and go, oh, my God, all these stories are so wrong. Like,
yeah.
And you just have to kind of,
Nick, I want to start to incorporate some of the questions that we have for you into this conversation. Jacob writes in and asks, did Christy give one of the best final tribal performances in the history of the game? He says, I can't recall anyone even owning their game so thoroughly and making such a bold, convincing case for why they should win. Beyond that, I can't recall anyone ever so drastically changing the perceptions of the jury. She didn't just tell them why she won. She showed them by giving such a dominant, well-articulated performance. She proved her sincerity in saying that laying low and letting them underestimate her was a calculated strategy. She was really savvy all along. Could you put her final Tribal Council performance in historical context with American Survivor?
Yeah, so before I went out there, one of the things that I did for preparation was I watched nearly every final Tribal Council to see which was good and which was bad, and I took some notes. And at the top of that pyramid for me is Todd. And I think that that's well documented that Todd has one of the best final tribal councils. I think she was better.
Wow.
I really do. I do think she was better because Todd had on his side the fact that people actually liked him in the first place. So he didn't have to work as hard. Christy had just come out of a tribal council where everyone was falling over themselves saying, oh God, you're an idiot. You know, Flick said, oh, you're an idiot. You're going to lose to her face. And she changed everyone's mind. And you have to give that props. And I think what's so good about it is that she didn't just appeal to each player and what they value. She was even very willing to say when the player was wrong. She said, no, that's not how it happened. And she challenged the jury. And people really respected that she had backbone when it seemed like she didn't have backbone for so long. It spoke to everyone. You know, my question was about I changed it to be about, you know, if a fan podcast rings you up, how would you defend how would you defend your game to other super fans? And she completely pandered to what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And she knew how to do that for everyone.
You talked about podcasts in your final Tribal Council speech.
I did. Yeah. And that's why it got cut out.
That must have gotten edited out. Were we mentioned? I hope Christy's not listening to this. I would feel terrible.
No, I hope she is because this is good.
This one is good. The rest of the time. What, Nick, when you were taking notes on the different tribal council, final tribals, what did you write about mine?
Next question.
Do what JT is doing.
Yeah.
I wonder, is that the first time the word podcast is said on any Survivor season?
I think it might be. I really do. And she compared herself to Danny Boatwright and all these other Survivor players. And I just thought that it was pure gold for an answer for what I'm. And I just looked at Lee and I just knew that he had no idea who these people were. And it just kind of really did kind of crystallize for me that I don't know if I can award my dream to someone who doesn't even understand my dream.
Yeah, the Danny Boatwright comparison is another interesting one, and I think that people have probably made that as well. But I do think that the Danny thing, to me, while the final tribal council is more impressive from Christie's end, that I do feel like that Danny starts making her move earlier, and I think it's a little bit more that you can see, sort of like, okay, more here visible. Comes Danny, where she's coming around at the final six, she gets immunity when she's supposed to go home. And I think that she had more to do with the Stephanie, Rafe, Lydia, Cindy business starting to fall apart than anything that Christie did outside of the final tribal council. It was almost like that Christie didn't start. Well, again, I don't want to get, you know, killed by the Christie truthers, but there, I feel like there was less where Christie's game was almost like, I knew if I played the game, then I would get voted out. So I consciously chose to abstain from playing. And now I'm telling you how I did it, where I feel like that Danny did more within the confines of the 39 day game.
Yep. Yep. That makes sense. Definitely. Agreed.
Can I say something that I'm going to forget to say otherwise? Was this the worst rites of passage ever? That was so bad.
Oh, no, I actually was into it because I was like, oh, my God, we're going to do rites of passage now? Oh, man, this is going to be 20 minutes. And I went in with low expectations.
I always love it. But then they'd be like, they had nothing to say. Like, ah, Matt. Yes, Matt. Ah, yes, Sam. You know,
no, like, some people, they really yada yada. Like, oh, Tegan, she was there.
Yeah, all of them. No, yada. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, Tegan's was. Oh, that was the girl that went from yellow to blue. Is that what?
Yeah, like, yeah.
No one has anything better to say, like Tegan.
They had nothing to say about it. Anyway, there was no sense of like, I need to give this person a fitting epitaph. You know, it was all like, yes, Matt.
Yeah. I think I did the best out of the rites of passage, I would say.
I was pumped up to see Dez again.
Mm. Everyone loves Dez. Dez is great. Dez is a huge fan. People need to be nicer to Dez.
Yes.
Are people not being nice to Dez?
No, just people saying, oh, what are you doing on that first episode? He knew what he was doing. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Legendary first boot, Dez.
Legendary.
Steve, you see Bianca in that rites of passage?
Yeah. Everyone really felt like, thank God Bianca was voted out when she was, or she would have run the game.
All right. Here's a question from Zach Brooks, who writes in to ask, with Christie winning, does that further prove the Sandra strategy is the best way to play Survivor? Anybody but me, Nick. Does that apply even double to Australian Survivor?
It's funny because when I did in the Connor vote, when we first merged, you know, I'm happy to say I had one good move. I was instrumental in putting that together. And I remember Christie coming up to me and saying, Nick, tell me who to vote for and I'll vote for them. And I was like, wow, that's a Sandra thing. And I was like, she's going to go far with this. I didn't predict how far she would go, but she did actually kind of pretty much use those words. And what's interesting is is that going to make other people next year play that game? I don't know. Is now everyone clued into it in Australian Survivor that the person who seemingly floats through is going to get targeted? Maybe that then opens the door for the bigger players to then deflect some of the heat off of them onto the people like Christie. So I see it as a win-win that Christie's legacy going forward.
Nick, I know you've listened to a lot of the podcasting that Steven and I have done, correct?
Not a lot. All of it.
Okay. Yeah. All of it. All right. So can you just get into some of what are some of the major things?
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
What are some of the major things that Steven and I got wrong this season in terms of our discussion of the season?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to have to think about that. I really do think.
Are there too many things or not that many things?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I was always surprised. I'd be sitting there and I'd be watching, listening with my fiance every once in a while, and I would turn to her and be like, "How do they know that? Like, how have they figured that out?" And it was very true. That's not me sucking kneecaps. That's me saying that like you were reading the edit quite well. So I will give you props for that.
Begrudgingly. Thank you.
It's our childlike joy of watching Australian Survivor.
Yeah, that was such a good article.
Yes, that was good. All right, but there was nothing that major that comes to mind that we totally screwed up.
Nothing that springs to mind.
Were we too hard on Christie along the way?
Yeah, look, I think you were, but everyone was. I was.
Right.
I certainly was.
Who do you say other than I emailed you somewhere along the way. I was like, I love your quotes. I'm like writing down your quotes. And one of my favorites was like, I'm going to get it wrong because I'm not looking at it. It's like, just because you're, you know, having the best strategy doesn't mean your strategy is going to work out. And who do you think this season, other than yourself, was the best player, who didn't get to the end?
I'd love to count myself as one of the best players, but my stats don't really line up. So I'll remove myself from that category. I genuinely believe that the best players of the season were Brook and Elle.
Really?
Hands down, hands down. They had everything. They had all three components, whereas other people had maybe one or two or a smattering of each. They had all three.
What about Phoebe?
And you, sorry, I never played with Phoebe, so I only see Phoebe's from what we've seen on TV. And I do think that Phoebe is up there as well, and her luck just kind of ran out eventually. Mm-hmm. So I do think that strategically the girls wiped the floor with the boys this year. Absolutely.
Well, what do you think about Vavau's decision to vote out Rowan?
I think that was short-sighted, but if you look at why they lost the next challenge, it was because of a puzzle, and Rowan wouldn't have been able to help them anyway. So it's not just like you remove the piece of Rowan and the whole Jenga pile falls down. It was more just like it set a bad precedent that anyone could go home, which created huge
paranoia. That twist was broken, right? You did an amazing job of taking advantage of that twist, but it was a broken twist, the way that the tribes swapped.
So when they said it's going to be a huge reward, and when Matt and I were walking back from the little pontoon back to the beach, we looked at each other and we're like, what do you reckon it'll be? And we both said at the same time, maybe we'll get to pick our own tribe. And we looked at each other and went, as if it'll be that. And then when it was, we were like, what? Like, as if we get that power. Like, that's too much power. But I'm not complaining when I'm on the receiving end of it.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the thought process, it really turned into, when you guys had that merge, that the people that you took over from Aganoa, that really turned out to be the people that ultimately made it to the end. So just remind me, so what you guys took, did you guys draft them first to have a strong tribe?
No, so when we were discussing, everyone was saying they wanted to bring Samo back into the Sanapu fold because he had been swapped over. And I certainly didn't want that. But me arguing any other thing against that would have been a non-starter. So I just had to let that go. So they brought Sam over. And then we needed some more muscle. So I wanted to bring Rowan because I knew that people didn't like Rowan. Mm. And I knew that he wouldn't be able to ingratiate himself any better than I could. And I also didn't want to give Kylie another parent to bond with. But everyone outvoted me again, and we got Lee. But then I kind of picked the next two people. So I picked Elle because I got along really well with her at the challenges, a few winks here and there. And Brooke also got along with her from the hanging up pole challenge where the three of them were hanging in the seat when we were holding the rope. And bringing Jenna over was my idea because I wanted to not only exact some personal revenge, but I wanted to break up that Vavau majority, and Sue couldn't help us in the challenge, and I thought that Craig maybe had my idol. So that's why we brought over
One Jenna. Of the things that we were really hard on you about this season was after Jenna Louise came over, that we felt like that was too much to go and really, you know, tell her, give her a piece of your mind. And then the same thing with Sue. Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond to any of that criticism that we had for you this season?
Yeah, no, do you know what? Like, as I was talking to her, every single Survivor playbook rule was running through my head. Like, Nick, what are you doing? You're being such an idiot right now. And I was like, oh, well. Like, and I just kind of, I threw everything. I know that's not what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to isolate anyone. You're definitely not supposed to attack someone in front of all these people that you've never played with before. And I don't know, maybe that makes me a better reality TV show contestant than it does make me a Survivor player. But at that point, I felt like I needed to get something off my chest. One thing I will say, though, and my delivery was completely off, so bad. But my fiance says it all the time, that if I just get something off my chest, I feel better about it and it's done. And what happened to that storyline? It disappeared because it literally was over. And from a couple of days afterwards, JO and I became like such good friends. We would stay up all night talking about poetry and books, and we really did bond. It's true. Same as Sue. And once I got that off my chest, it was over. And JL and Sue are actually staying at my house next weekend in Adelaide. So all is well, even though I fight night on Sanapu Beach happened.
That's good.
So that's original Vavau, right? Is that that's a original Vavau?
The last three remaining members of original Vavau.
Yeah. Which was a really fun tribe. That was a really fun tribe.
Yeah, that was a fun tribe. Could you talk a little bit about Andrew, who really started to get a villain edit in the mid-season of the game? How was he as intense on the show and on the island as he ultimately came off, where eventually I was calling
Absolutely
him the
not.
Australian Russell Hance by the time he ended up going out?
No, he was not at all. The thing that, so Andrew was very, very quiet around camp. he, in many ways, he did just kind of sit there looking very sour a lot of the time, and he wouldn't contribute to conversation. He and I didn't get along a lot early on. I knew that he was a fan, and he just never smiled, and it made me upset. I was like, God, like, man, this is our dream. Like, get a bit enthusiastic about it. But I didn't know that he was going off into his confessionals and like quoting Russell Hansen, doing all these crazy things. But where it did kind of pop out was at tribal council. And I only had one tribal council with him, but he spent 12 days being completely dead silent. And then at tribal council, he came out and was like, "That I don't think they showed it all." He was saying, "I'm just watching this with popcorn at Sanafu fighting." And I was like, that's not something that you would say. And it started to trigger to me that he's being a different person in his confessionals than he is in real life. So good on him, because that's what you're supposed to do.
So then when did it bleed over? Like, what, you know, what, because it seemed like people got wind that he was super schemey or actually.
Yeah, I think what happened was.
Go ahead.
No, I think what happened was in Vivao, like he was in a very precarious position and he needed me out so that he could take my position in the alliance. And people did say that once I left, he did kind of like come to life a little bit more. And I think being in control and getting rid of Rowan and Kat, it did kind of give him a bit more confidence to kind of start, you know, behaving in a way that Phoebe was eventually able to sniff out.
Another big moment for you, obviously, you know, big inflection point for you was the neutral box question, where you had to decide, you know, is it do we go for the idol clue or do we go for a bag of food? I think it was rice or the beans. Had an interesting strategy, which I think is not a terrible strategy, but I'm curious about your perspective about it now, where you took the idol clue with Tegan and then admitted you got an idol clue but told a false clue.
Yeah. So I figured out the way to do it. I figured out the best thing to do if you're ever with the neutral box again. So step one, go and get the flint. Step two, set fire to the post and the entire island, because no matter what you do, you are burning down the island and your game. Yeah. It is the neutral box thing is the worst. There really is no proper way to play it. And especially on a tribe of super fans, everyone knew exactly what was up. So because before we left, we knew that it was going to be some sort of idle clue, I couldn't walk back in and be like, here's a bag of beans, knowing that Sue, Andy, and Craig have seen every single Survivor episode. So I needed to lean into the fact that there was an idol. And I appreciated when you said that it was the right strategy, because I do believe it is the right strategy. I think I just executed it really, really poorly. I think the two things I should have done was, one, gone on the quest with Craig or someone else from the Alliance. Two, I should have kept the idol clue as proof. And three, I literally hesitated 5 to 10 minutes between telling the fake clue and then telling my Alliance the real clue. I should have just told them literally straight away. Because 10, 15 minutes was all it took for the paranoia to breed, for Andy to find his mark, and then split us apart. And my game was absolutely toast.
Do you think that what you did would have worked on one of the other tribes, either on Aganoa or Sanapu?
Absolutely. On Sanapu, I guarantee that maybe one person has seen Walls Apart, and that's maybe Matt. No one else would have seen it. That would have worked on Sanapu. And on Aganoa, the only person, you know, Christy, Evan,
Dez.
You know, but Dez was gone by then.
Bianca, Bianca. Evan, no.
Yeah, Bianca was gone.
She's an FBI profile, or she's a, you know, she's a, you know, a government agent.
Private eye.
Former federal agent.
Yes.
Nah, I think that on Sanapu, my plan would have worked just fine. And my poem wasn't as bad as it sounded. I actually went, again, like I watched all final tribal councils, I went through and read at least 15 different idol clues across the season and noted them down in my journal before I left. And I did kind of try and assign same metaphorical values to like landmarks. And I was thinking of that chair that Cochrane sat in for that stupid confessional.
Oh my God.
Where it was like a thing that looked like a throne for a king.
Yeah.
And I was trying to kind of, you know,
find one. Were you trying to look for like a similar chair?
Well, I knew that there were like trees that had like a flat base that kind of went out like that. And I thought that because other people had said, oh, that's an interesting tree. So I was trying to build on what people actually already knew. And the stanza length and the rhyme scheme and the meter of the poem was very similar to the poem that I said. It's just they only showed half of it. So
yeah,
it
wasn't a lot of people were paying attention to the meter and the rhyme scheme.
That is the
typical rhyme scheme from an idol clue. So I believe that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was trying. I'm just a Survivor nerd, I guess. English teacher.
Let me ask you before we get into some of these questions. How did you get cast on Australian Survivor? Obviously, you're a big Survivor fan. You heard that there was going to be an Australian version of the show. How did you end up on the island?
So when the audition, when it was announced in November, everyone tagged me in this post saying, you know, you got to get on the show. You love Survivor. And straight away, I was like, oh, I'm not applying for that because I wanted to throw everyone off the scent. And straight away, I started making my video. I sent my video off at the beginning of the year, and I've just like nervously waited for months and months, finally got the call. But even before I got the call, I turned to my fiance and said, babe, I have a feeling I'm going to get on. Just, I don't know why. We need to postpone our wedding. So we postponed our wedding, which was supposed to be in July, when I was in Samoa, and we're getting married in January now. So yeah, it was just the traditional way with the video and the audition process, and yeah, just months and months of heartache, waiting and waiting and waiting.
Wait, let me ask a few really quick questions about this life on the island. Can you put to rest toilet gate, where I heard that you each get your own private luxury bathroom with running water? Is that true?
Yeah, it's gold plated, yeah. And there's air freshener. No, I don't know what I can tell you now. I'm not just saying this. Jonathan's article is wrong. There are no porta potties. There's no porta potties at the camp. There was a hole with a toilet kind of cover thing on it so that the maggots wouldn't crawl out.
You got a cover and a hole. I mean,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, we didn't have a hole or a cover.
There was a hole with just a cover. It wasn't a traditional toilet. It was just like a cover so that you couldn't step in it. Like, it was a hole, but there's no porta potty. There's no, none of that.
But it was like a created thing though. Like, someone else, you didn't dig your own, you know, poop hole.
No, yeah. The idea was that so we would all go in the same spot without,
So what kind of food access did you have? Because it seemed like people, for 55 days, it seemed like you guys actually had a pretty solid supply of food.
And hold on, did you look for the immunity idol there? Because isn't that a throne fit for a king?
That was one of the jokes. That's one of the jokes that was being thrown around by Barry. Yeah.
Me and Barry were.
One and the same. Yeah. Where's your wizard hat, mate?
I've got that.
So we had rice and beans, and at the vow, because it was a swamp, there was very few coconuts. So the only coconuts we could eat was if they washed up on the shore. So there was very little foraging, and at Sinapu there was a lot of coconuts, but nothing else. So
really? Yeah,
I thought that we'd be able to find all this fruit and bananas, nothing. It was just from what we gathered off that first day. But we did get rice and beans, so we ate fine.
And you had ample rice and beans to eat all the way through. You know, they had it for all the way through 55 days.
It was delivered as we went. So okay.
So you didn't have to ration it though, because it did seem like people were able to.
There was definitely rationing, and like, I know it looks like we're always eating, but that was the times when like everyone would kind of be sitting around, and there's a lot of padding on Survivor Australia, so you got to show people eating to fill out 20 minutes or so.
You know, one thing that people really liked about the show, which I agree, is that, you know, because it really was showed like a sort of warts and all. You know, you'd never see those scenes of Christy being paranoid or really awkward and weird or indecisive and emotional.
Fishing with her underwear.
Yeah. If she won American Survivor. And that's, I think, a real testament to what was fun and interesting about Australian Survivor was, you know, you saw these little moments that showed you more of what life was really like. I mean, you know, I think my preference is for American Survivor, but because I'm grumpy. But I think for the most part, you know, I thought it was, I think if you want to know what it's like to be on Survivor.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. It definitely gave me, like, when you're watching it back, I was like, oh, as if they included that. Like, it gave much more than American Survivor ever would. And now, you know, I was watching Millennials Gen X with my fiance the other night, and I was just like, what? We're at tribal council already?
Exactly. Like, it's like, bam.
Why don't we have 15 shots of waves crashing and a little crab scuttling before we get people talking?
Yeah.
So, much sharper.
We spent 28 hours with these contestants that made to the final three. I mean, that's more than double what we would have spent with any American Survivor contestant. So, yeah. I mean, theoretically, we should know Lee and Al and Christy better than we know any American Survivor player. Steven, is that how you feel? Do you feel like that you really know them as people?
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I do think with American Survivors, you know, this thing sometimes that, you know, you get a very edited perspective of someone, right? And I did feel like with these people, you know, and you know, Nick, as you're saying, like, oh, Elle was much more, you know, this or Christy was much more that. But like, I felt like I got a really full, you know, understanding of most of them, you know, maybe not Bianca. I don't think we got a lot of Bianca, but other than her, I felt like we got a really good, rich understanding of a lot of these people.
But I wouldn't disagree with that, Steven. Do you feel like you really know Elle as a person?
Well, I think Elle is maybe one of the few where you don't, but I think we got a lot, you know, maybe like Lee, I thought, Chris. I mean, one of the weaknesses of it was that they would often have, rather than show us more character moments, they would often have just like the same strategic confessional told by like 10 different people. Like I remember like with Exile Island, you know, rather than kind of getting into like what it's like to be spend the night on Exile Island, you had like literally like 10 to 12 confessionals about like, it's crazy, we're on Exile Island, you know, so you're suggesting, Rob, that like they didn't have fully rounded characters.
You know, I would think that we would really know these people, and I'm not sure necessarily if I do feel that way. Nick, I know you were out there with them. What do you think about the job that they did in really fleshing out these characters?
It's always hard because you forget what you're learning because right. you lived with them based on what you see on TV. But I do think that everyone got a lot of screen time, but comparatively, Elle didn't. You know, so like there was a lot of discussions when I was voted out, like, oh, thank God he's gone. We can learn about, you know, a few other people because it's sucking airtime. But I feel like a lot of people did get episodes. Like there was, you know, there'd be like a Flick-centric episode. Then we'd get a Matt-centric episode. I do feel like everyone got a fair share and no one can really complain because comparatively to America, we got a lot. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I just felt like overall it was kind of hit or miss. I felt like that with all the extra time, I felt like that there were still a lot of characters that I was just like, okay,
yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell you really anything about Jenna Louise. And there were some people I felt like that we really got a sense of like who they were, but there were other people where, you know, I really, even like somebody like Brooke, like I got that she was friends with Flick, but other than that, I really couldn't tell you anything else about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, they had a few moments. Like there was before Jenna was swapped over to us, they talked about her like missionary work in Kenya. And before, you know, when Brooke won the letter, they talked about her relationship with her dad. So there were smatterings of it, but I know what you're saying. I think these are all things that going into season two, I think the show will maybe work on and realize that maybe they could produce a tighter product. But the fact that it's the first season, I think the show did such a good job and it really it's definitely blown me away. I'm really proud of the whole product.
What about that length of time? Was it, did you, you know, I guess you kind of went out, you know, basically at the 37 day mark, right? Or 36 day mark.
I came fourth, everyone. I came fourth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Where was your legacy really, advantage?
Like, yeah.
did you feel like everyone else, do you think that like time, do you think it was too long? Do you think people suffered for that? Or people just exhausted?
I know that by the time I left, I was exhausted. Like I couldn't put one foot in front of the other. And I don't know how they're still doing it. They're probably still out there. But I don't know how they were still doing it on day 55. But I don't think it needs to be that long. I really don't. I think that it could – I would prefer there to be 20 contestants, you know, even 45 days. But I don't know. I just think that it could be shorter because by the end of it, you're just going absolutely loopy. Like I was loopy – on day 37.
All right, well, let's get into some of the questions that we have for you, Nick, from the live show listeners. And why don't we start off here with Ashley Bedazzle, who says, was this the most emotional final immunity challenge ever? It really did have all the feels as far as I was concerned, especially at the point where Christy yeah. won and her dad was like trying to like resuscitate her and she's just sort of like I want like, yeah. I heard from a lot of people I've never cried during Survivor. I cried during this, Nick.
Yeah,
I didn't cry. Yeah. I didn't that you won't get me crying. Yeah, I didn't. I only cried two times on Survivor. No, you didn't get me crying from this.
No, I was crying. I thought it was amazing. I thought it had everything. I thought it had absolutely everything. Like the setting alone on that cliff with the waves crashing on
beautiful.
Top. Even that was enough to make it yeah. unique, let alone the fact that Christy was the person who won when we all said she couldn't, let alone the family being there, let alone her father picking her up like some sort of Christ figure. Like it was brilliant. Such good TV. So, so jealous that I wasn't there to be part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. Look, I will say after I was voted out, I had very little moments where I was like, I wish I still was out there, but that was one of them.
Yeah, now that's a real Final Three challenge.
That is.
Yeah. It's not, you know, hold coins in a bloody whatever that
cave
thing was.
Let's put a hat on. It's so stupid. It's so stupid, Steven.
I don't remember the put a hat on challenge.
All right. What about Edmo?
Ed Morris wants to know, was it the right call to vote off Matt before Flick?
So this would be at the final five to put the votes on Matt instead of Flick for the triumvirate of Lee and Elle and Christy. Did you have any issue with that move?
No, I think that was the right move.
I mean, it
the
worked, right move for them. Didn't it?
It was the right move for them because for all the Aganoans to vote out Matt because Matt would have gotten had more respect from the jury than Flick did, I think.
Can we talk a little bit about Matt and his game? Because I think that Steven and I were really high on Matt around the middle of the game during the Nick and Matt era, Matt's Angels era of the game.
Yeah.
But then I do feel like that once they got to where, you know, Lee and Sam showed up, then it seemed like he never really got the momentum back in his game. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, my game was broken up into four phases, and my second phase was that point at Sanafu, but before the merge where Sam and everyone came over. That was my favorite phase of the game. And I know that that's where Matt had a lot of his good strategic work, had a lot of his good character stuff, and I certainly loved hanging out with him at that time. Once those big alpha males rolled in and L came, it really did disrupt the dynamic for Matt because all of a sudden, you know, I'm hanging out with Lee a little bit more and, you know, Brooke and Flick are hanging out with Elle a bit more. And, you know, he had Jenna and Jenna and myself and him were a nice little pairing, a nice little grouping. But I feel like he did lose a bit of his puff in that social dynamic. But, you know, credit to Matt. Up until that point, he was running the show at Sanafu. He ran the show on the Bianca vote. He ran the show with when Tegan went home. He was in control. And I think that he did deserve to be in control. He just, I think he lost his steam after that.
Yeah. How did he lose it though? Like, you know, why, if he's got this group of people who are voting with him, you know, why does that suddenly like dissipate?
I think that that's one of the things that got lost in the storyline of the vow losing so much.
Yeah.
At Sanafu, there was a ton of strategic conversations happening.
Sure.
And just to give a bit of a lay of the land, when Lee and Elle came over, they talked about how what they didn't like about the people at Aganoa, such as Evan and Kat, etc., was that they talked strategy first, friendship second. So I knew that because of that, I needed to kind of slow down a little bit, make the friendship bonds, and then join socially, join strategically. And when I did that around about, you know, 6 days in, Elle, Lee, Sam, Flick, and Brooke had already formed the strategic five. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. I thought that we were slowing down here. I thought that we were doing friendship first. But they had said that and then done the opposite. So at that point, I joined as the sixth, and Matt thought that he was still part of the four with Sanafu. And it was a very odd dynamic because we knew that there was such a tight five, and you know, people thought they were in or thought they weren't. But that five just kind of like pushed all the way through. And at that point, I think Matt got a bit rattled by that.
But so, you know, we're watching and we're like, why do these other people, you know, not, I mean, obviously when you're there and you've got Brooke like whispering sweet nothings in your ear about how you guys are tight, like you believe it, but why, I'm sure you've kicked yourself 1,000 times, but like what was stopping that kind of counter group from sort of forming together and voting out, you know, like going against that Lee, Flick, Brooke, Sam group? Like, why didn't you and Matt and Jenna, you know, you're saying you, Matt and JL were close. Why didn't you do something about it?
Yeah, so we had kind of, there was these, you know, semi-conversations that if we go to tribal council, maybe this will happen, maybe that. But we just were never tested. We never were tested. We never went to tribal council, so we don't know what would happen. Who knows? Maybe, you know, JL would have been the first person to get voted out those first two times, but then maybe it would have been me, or maybe, you know, Lee hadn't ingratiated himself enough by that point. We just never really know. And we tried getting a few things together, but everyone thought that they were part of the core part. And that speaks to how good Brooke and Elle were. Because I thought that I was with Brooke and Elle. Matt thought that he was with Brooke and Sam. And, you know, Kylie thought that she was with Brooke and Flick. And that speaks to how well they played.
Yeah.
That they were able to have a real five, but make everyone think they were still part of it.
Was there any talk during post-swap or merge Sanafu of throwing a challenge during that really long Vival losing streak?
Yeah. Yeah, so the conversation did come up one day. I think Sam brought it up. I'm not quite sure. Someone brought it up. And I just put the kibosh on it straight away, 100%.
That seems like a role reversal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Sam. I'm not quite sure. Forgive me if I'm wrong, Sam, but it was someone. And I just said, I remember Brooke coming up to me and saying, you know, do you think we should throw a challenge? And I said, absolutely not. On any level are we throwing a challenge. My place in that tribe was nowhere near solidified. It made, really made sense for Brooke and that too, because they were going nowhere. I was still like fourth from the bottom, if not, you know, in that I was part of that last four. I'm not throwing a challenge. I'm not, absolutely no way.
Like Eliza will never let me live it down.
Yeah, unless you're PG when she did it, that's the only time I think it really makes sense.
Okay.
How are you so good at puzzles, Nick?
Amazing at puzzles.
I never knew that this was something that I could do that well. Like, I love puzzles. I'm always kind of like playing around with them. But before I went out there, I really practiced. So I went through and, you know, I posted on previous on Survivor and was like, you know, what are some of the most difficult puzzles ever? And I went back and watched and I kind of did what Spencer did. Yeah, and I like freeze framed them on the screen and traced them out and then took them to work and blew them up large in cards.
Did Colin Stone email you?
Yeah, well, yeah, he didn't send me any tricks. I need to figure it out on my own. And then I would do them blindfolded at my table until I could do them by hand. And like, yeah, like the big flame one, that Cochrane one I found was the most difficult puzzle. So I really practiced that. And then the tree version that Joe did. And then when it came to the third immunity challenge, when Sue and I built the upright puzzle, it definitely paid off because I got a bit of a rhythm going.
Let this be a lesson to like future Survivor players, you know, like putting in the work really pays off. I mean, you must have some native talent because you were blowing through puzzles that, you know, you'd obviously never seen before, but I mean, that's really remarkable.
Although David Wright this season, you know, is saying that he, you know, with a 3D printer recreator, it hasn't really, you know, bore any fruit for him yet.
Yeah, well, I thought about 3D printing because I have one at work, but I didn't go that far. But I did so much preparation. You know, the jailbreak challenge that Flick and Matt competed in. My sister and I, and we set that up in my backyard. And I would reach out and we'll try and get keys. And I figured out the best way to do it and the quickest way to do it. So I was able to talk them through it.
What's the best way?
So the best strategy is to really focus on getting your tying right the first time.
Yeah.
So instead of doing just one tie, do two ties per join so that it can't slip that way.
Oh, that's smart.
And the best thing is to hold it instead of holding the I don't know if you can see, instead of holding the pieces of wood that way, you hold them that way so there's less space for them to bend. And you have to put a hook on the end to pick the key up.
Yeah, the hook thing was something I'd never seen before. I don't think anyone's ever done the hook before. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, so I was like, Flick, put a hook. So then they did it.
Oh, really?
And then when, So I said to them, I was the only one, the best one for the fire. So I had to do that. But I said, guys, if you do this, I'll talk you through it. And if you see in the background, you can see me kind of just talking them through it. And it worked. It really did.
Yeah,
the hook.
I mean, I'm amazed that no one's thought of that before. Like, I don't think has that ever happened on US Survivor, the hook?
Never.
That's really
smart. Full credit to my sister Louisa figured that out. So okay. Good on you, Lou.
Maxime in the chat says, talk about Kylie. She was an intriguing player, never got why all of Sunapu hated her. Well, what was the deal with Kylie, especially when she got mad that everybody was sleeping in her bed?
Okay, hate is a strong word, but she definitely did not fit into the social dynamics. She's a very intense personality, and I feel that I'm also very intense, but I think I'm more relatable to some of the people that were out there. Maybe it's because of my age. I don't know, but she definitely just never fit in. And the weird thing about that is that she never did anything about that, and I wish that she had. Or no, I don't wish she had, but she did want to at one point. She said, Nick, me and you will go with Kate. Like, and I just turned to her and said, absolutely not, because she wasn't keyed into the fact that Kate wanted me out. So why would I go with her? But she did try a little point, but never fully committed. So when Tegan and I came over, she had these very vague conversations like, you know, maybe there's a chance we could do something.
Yeah.
She didn't even say that. It was like, maybe you're not as dead as it could be. And he was like, are you trying to build strategy with me right now? Like, you know, it was very hard to pick up on her clues because she never wanted to stick her neck out fully. And one thing I learned on Survivor is that sometimes you have to stick your neck out.
Yeah.
And if it gets chopped off, it gets chopped off. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and the thing with the bed was
Australian Survivor though, right? Isn't the lesson of Australian Survivor never stick your neck out at all?
suck your neck into the, yeah. I certainly
go
feel
into
like
your shell like a frightened turtle.
I certainly feel like I did it sometimes, and it did pay off. Like the Tegan vote, like I stuck my neck out, rolling the dice, knowing that it was gonna be a 2-2-2. That if I had voted for Tegan, it would have been a 3-2-1. And I would have definitely been safe. So I didn't stick my neck out, and I stuck my neck out and gave a I backed myself that my alliance were going to work with me, and it built trust. So in that instance, that's the kind of thing that she didn't do.
Okay, let's do a couple more questions here with Nick. Steven, what does Brian have to say?
Brian Kaplan's asking, do you agree that Christy did an awesome job talking to the jury and deserved the win? We've
covered that. Yeah.
We're all in agreement. Yes, she did an awesome job.
Alex Wilpon wants to know, was Nick surprised at how anti-strategy many of his competitors were during the game?
Alex Wilpon, a big Australian Survivor Nick fan.
Yes, he is. Thank you, Alex. Much appreciated.
She is.
I was so surprised. I really, really was surprised. I went out there thinking that this was season 34 in my mind, and so many people were playing it as if it was season one. And I think just because everyone was pushing this idea of mateship so much that it just was never going to work. That strategy kind of seemed so opposed, and people really were not okay with that. And I don't know. I think, you know, people say Sam Wandel, Sir, all these people, they've never played before, you know, all these non-players, it's so hard to play against them. But that's your job.
Yeah.
Your job is to figure out how to play against people, whether they know how to play or don't know. So if the fact that I was beaten by people who've never seen the show before, it's just more credit to them.
Okay.
So, you know.
Oh, this is good.
Unfortunately.
I'm excited for the next question.
Christine, Nick, will you attempt an American accent, please, and then do a Dennis impression?
I don't know what's the difference between American and Canadian, but I really love listening to American Survivor Know-It-Alls. I just think that it's so much fun for an Aussie like me to come on the podcast.
That's pretty good.
I'm trying to put my finger on that. A little bit of like a California type.
Yeah, not I'm subpar at those kind of impressions.
No, that was good.
Yeah, pretty good.
There's nothing wrong with being bad at impressions, Nick.
Yeah, I loved your Dez impressions, everyone. They were so good.
Dez is the best. Yeah. I love Dez.
Yeah, Dez is great.
You know, I have a thing for I love these eccentric early boots in Survivor history. They're so much fun to talk about, and Dez was just such a legend.
He really was. He was insane.
He was our mean motor scooter.
Yes, he really was. All right, Survivor Central wants to know, how awkward was it to have the finalist families there for the reading of the votes? Did Lee's boys have a meltdown when he lost? I doubt that happened, right?
It's gotta be sad though. See your dad lose.
We filmed two endings, so
they didn't know.
So you guys filmed an end with what, like with fake votes?
Yeah, that's been reported by the show in the media, so I'm not giving away.
This is very interesting because I don't even know if they did that on the first U.S. Survivor when they did it. So what did they do? So they did a version where Lee got 9-1 votes?
Yeah, well, how many votes did Lee get?
Both readings were 4-5, so it was just more for the spectacle of it.
So, but wait, like when everyone runs up and starts hugging Christy, and Lee's face has dropped, right? Like Lee looks like, wow. Like Lee does not expect, to my mind, Lee did not expect Christy to win. That's the emotion that I'm seeing there. But in fact, that may not be the case. Maybe he's just like tired of play acting.
Yeah, no, that was the first one that we filmed. So that seems to be the more genuine reaction.
Yeah.
But that's the way they do a lot of reality shows here in Australia, like My Kitchen Rules and MasterChef all has like double endings filmed to stop spoiling.
So what happened in the ending where Lee won? I mean, and like, did everyone on the jury just like have to go along with it? I mean, I think it would be pretty obvious to tell that this was not the real ending.
To be honest, I up until the finale, like in my mind, like I never asked anyone, but in
really?
My mind, I thought that it was, I swear I didn't. I was so scared of stuffing it up for anyone. I really was very, you know what it's like when you're a first time player, you just, you're very paranoid. No one knew what happened. I didn't even tell my fiance what happened. Like everything was a complete secret for everyone around me.
Except like the legions of people who have been spoiled on the result.
Yeah. And people would say that to me. I'd be like, you have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that it was going to be like a 6-3 vote, to be honest.
Crazy. All right. Couple more questions. What about Connor? Steven's favorite player, Connor.
Yeah. What happened? You know, Connor wants to know, Nick, are you and Sam friends now? You guys seemed really close in the game.
Yeah, yeah, we used to spoon all the time, and you know, he's going to be my best man in my wedding. And no, we're friends. I hold no ill will to anyone. Like, as much as in the game, I'm like a little bit of a, you know, shit. A poo stirrer. I definitely hold no will. He came to Adelaide. I picked him up from the airport. We've hung out. Like, I irritate him. He irritates me. And it was Family Feud with Survivor was on last night, and Sam was on it, and he was still talking about me. So
why weren't you on the Family Feud? Yeah.
Yeah. What the heck?
I don't know. You tell me. They chose Sam and Lee first.
The only thing I could think of was, did they pick all, like, would they have a travel budget? Do you not live near where they did the Family Feud?
No, they flew people in from around the country. So they can only have two guys from Sanapu, and villains don't make good afternoon family entertainment,
right.
I don't think. Yeah.
I think they
outrageous.
Do.
Yeah.
They do. Okay.
It is outrageous.
All right.
They had Rob at Pop Fest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What's up with that? Okay.
What was funny, though, on Family Feud is that Sam just deferred to Brooke for all his answers. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the show imitating the show.
All right. Christine Radice wants to say, why are the Aussies so pro the good guys narrative and anti the strategists? Also, what does stuffed mean? Is that a pleasant way of saying the F word?
So to say, oh, I'm stuffed means I'm really tired. Or if you want to say get stuffed, that means like go get F.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
My stuff.
So why the Aussies so get my stuff. The whole thing about the good guys is I've just never understood, you know, that's for someone else to assign you. You can't assign yourself the good guy. That's for someone else to say.
Yeah.
And that just really never sat well with me, because I think I know I'm a good guy in my real life. I don't need to go on a show to prove people that. That's for my family and my friends and my students to know. That's not for, you know, I don't care what.
Aren't you doing that right now, going on a show and saying you're the good guy?
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it. I'm saying that's for my people and saying, you know what, this guy sucks anyway. And that's fine, because it really doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. I just think that this whole idea of good guys and mateship is such a, like, it's so ingrained in us as Australians from when we're young. Like, it's part of our cultural identity. And people try to entrench it into us that we should be so, like, outwardly proud of, you know, the fact that we give everyone a fair go, and the fact that, you know, we're not American TV replicas. And I just don't know how much of that rings true today in Australian society. I really don't. And maybe it's the fact that I've suckled at the teat of, you know, US network television for so long, or the fact that I'm, you know, from a migrant family where I kind of like am half Australian, half not. I don't know. I'm proud to be Australian, but some of those values don't hold up to me. And that's why it doesn't bother me to not be the biggest mateship. It's like the sinking mateship.
Stephen and I never pronounce ourselves as the good guys or the bad guys. That we know that is not our role. That is the job of the commenters and the egg people on Twitter to decide.
Yes, they're the good guys.
The egg people. Yeah. The egg people are coming for us.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Tony's Llama. How did Nick's relationship with Sue and Jenna Louise evolve? It wasn't really shown after a while. And we touched on that briefly, that you guys were able to sort of mend fences with them, and that's why they didn't show it so much, because you sort of were able to resolve that story.
The storyline disappeared because all of us worked actively.
Speaking of the egg people, in terms of Magic Matt and the chicken, this was one of the things I had wanted to ask you was how much was Ty and the chicken in the mind of Matt as you guys went along with this season?
All right. Let me clarify what happened with that. So we left Australia the day before the Korong finale. So we had seen that Ty and Mark, the chicken, were making it all the way to the end, but I didn't get to see the finale. However, and in the, you know, just before the, you know, when people landed in Samoa, I think Sue in her hotel room had seen the final. So she had told everyone, and a few other people had seen it as well. So it was very, very, very front and center of people's minds about not wanting to kill the chicken. And I cannot believe that no one wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Well, because then Olivia Newton-John will bring you money at the finale, right?
Well, Sia is actually from Adelaide. She's from my hometown and from Matt's hometown. So I think, you know, I don't know if he was like trying to get that money, but I just found it so incongruous that someone didn't want to kill a chicken, but talks about how much they love eating chicken in their real life.
All right.
And the whole thing about Sam saying we're not professional chicken cookers, they cooked a chicken in the final four episode. No one died of salmonella.
All right, let's do one last good question. If you have one, Scott, give us whatever your best question left on the board is. All right, let's see. Let's go to Nirvana. Do you agree that we saw a little bit of Final Trial of Christy early on with the fake crying?
Yeah, I love that. Knowing the outcome of the show, or my perceived outcome of the show, watching that was like great.
What was the fake crying?
That was nice.
When was going home, right? And she was going to play the idol.
Yeah. And then they played the idol and voted out Craig. That was a nice feather in her cap. So
okay.
Good on Christy.
Let's see. And Matt Brody says, should Channel 10 have spent the money they used to fly the Final Three's family to Samoa on a reunion show?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
We just said how beautiful that was.
Well, what about the was Elle's family there too? Like, she must have been, right? For them to get them to Samoa, they must have at least had Elle's family and maybe Flick's family as well.
Yeah, they were.
That must have sucked.
One other thing I want to ask you about, and maybe this is opening a big can of worms. Did you guys have a lot of conversation there on the beach about Jonathan and how much he pried into things at Tribal Council versus maybe what you might have expected from Jeff Probst?
It's a good ending.
Yeah, look, the Tribal Councils that I was at, I never, because I wasn't at that Phoebe one, which is, I think, the most glaring example. So to me, Jonathan did such a good job. I thought he was so good.
Yeah.
And I think on the first day, I was like, he's doing really well, but like, it's not what I know of Jeff. But by the time my first Tribal Council rolled around on day 12, that guy was, he was perfect. Like, even in my final tribal speech, I even called him a national treasure, and he blushed and stuff. So, a bit of a bromance going on between Jonathan and I.
Yeah, he did a really good job for the first season out. I'm telling you that.
Definitely.
I saw Jeff Probst yesterday, but I think he's feeling the footsteps from LaPaglia because Jeff was looking like he was in pretty good shape. I've never seen Jeff as good of a shape as I saw him yesterday.
You saw that picture from 2.5 Men. Jeff is ripped.
I mean, but he's like big now also, Jeff.
Oh, wow. He'll never have the arm veins of Jonathan LaPaglia.
Oh, okay. Well, he's working on it. All right. Well, great stuff. Nick, do you have a hashtag for this conversation? We'll let the chat room marinate on that for a minute.
Welcome to the hell
Nick,
it is.
So what are you working on these days? So you're back teaching?
Yeah, back teaching. I was back in the classroom a few days after I got back from Samoa. So, you know, my year 12s, my senior years, they just graduated last week. So it's a nice run to the end of the year. And then getting married in January. So everything's really just about the wedding. And it's also Matt's engagement next weekend.
Oh,
so
congratulations to Matt. Mazel tov.
Yeah. So that'll be good. But no, just really looking forward to getting involved with the fan community. That's the only thing I want to come from this. So
that's cool.
You know, tweet me and I'm happy to kind of like always speak about Survivor. I'm not sick of it.
Here's what I'd like to do. If you're up for it is I want to have you back on to come and now talk about millennials versus Gen X and do a podcast talking about that and anything that ties into Australian Survivor with that. Steven, you're welcome to join us for that conversation. If you're not podcasted out.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'd love to. Thank you so much. Okay. That would be awesome. So got plenty to say.
We'll figure that out over these next couple of weeks as well. All right. Suggestion from the chat room, hashtag stuffed or get stuffed.
Okay. Yeah.
Get stuffed.
My stuffed.
Okay. My stuffed. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I love that.
All right. Hashtag.
Let's do it.
My stuffed. All right. Did you feel like you should have gotten more fishies this season, Nick?
No, definitely not.
Right. What about talk of Australian Survivor All-Stars? Is there a buzz about that?
Yeah, look, that comes up all the time. People always send me responses and, you know, asking me about it. The way I'm dealing with it is just saying it was a one and done deal for me only, and I'm not thinking about it. If in the future it was to happen, great. But for now, if you ask me to leave tomorrow, I'll definitely say no. I'm a little bit.
Wow.
I'm still trying to get my head good right and my body right up. Yeah.
Never go again. It's only worse.
Yeah. Steven, is he playing this the right way?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the move is to really say like, I will never play again. And then secretly like be like, oh, you know, I'm open to it.
I just think that my reputation will precede me. And I just don't know how worthwhile it
would
be.
Yeah. So. Right, Steven, does Nick get voted off first in Australian Survivor All-Stars?
You know, it's so much, it's so much is up to who you're with and who, you know, what the situation is like. Nick, I think you should play again. You know, what do you got to lose?
Well, you got to hope that now the next couple seasons, see, the thing that you have on your side is that you're in the first season and then you got to hope by like Australian Survivor 5, like it gets really dastardly. And then you've got like a bunch of like villains that are there.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wasn't even that bad. What are you guys talking about? Yeah.
Well, that's no, the thing too. When over time people will forget. So even like 2 or 3 seasons from now, no one's going to be like, oh, Nick's the guy. And you know, plus then you'll be like the Australian know-it-all and you know.
But hold on, everyone thought that Jerry was the second coming of you know Satan, and she did nothing. It's just that memory in your mind of that early villain.
So time is your friend. That's your biggest ally right now,
or your enemy.
No, well, no, we won't forget. We won't forget. Who else are they taking from this season? Stop it, Steve. All right. Well, great job, Nick. We thank you so much. Now, you are on Twitter, but is your Twitter private?
It was earlier on.
Okay,
in the season,
so now you are accepting Twitter follows.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, at Nick Iadanza, and Iadanza is spelled IADA.
And you watch Survivor on the East or on the US like version. You don't wait for Survivor to air in Australia, right? For the US version. Yeah. Okay. So people can't spoil you when they talk about these episodes, right?
Yeah. No, I race home on a Thursday and watch it like a couple of hours after it's aired in America.
All right. So follow at Nick Iadanza. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, I say Iadanza. Iadanza. It doesn't bother me. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Follow him on Twitter, and we will talk about some millennials versus Gen X coming up here in just a little bit. Steven, anything else?
No, this was good. This was a really good podcast. And Nick, you know, you made some really compelling arguments about Christie's win that have not brought me around to being happy with the season end, but certainly have given me some sort of
Steven,
understanding.
Do you take back some of the things you said about Christie earlier this week?
You're
the anti-Christite.
No, you're the anti-Christ.
No, I think I'm the anti-Christ. She survived 20 tribal councils. I went to 5 and was voted out of 2 of them. So I'm the anti-Christ.
All right. Well, no, good. Look, Christie truthers, you had your day. You called it. You're right. We were wrong. So please,
you know what, if you were spoiled, stop harassing and you Steven were like acting superior because you knew in advance, like that's annoying. You know, like it's if you want to be spoiled, enjoy. I don't have anything against people who want to be spoiled. I just don't like when people get spoiled and act like they're so like smart because they sought out a spoiler that everyone really has access to. Like, you know what? You chose to enjoy it your way. Like, good for you. But like, don't be like, oh, well, you're not so mean here.
Yeah, nobody was saying to us like, oh, just watch. But this season, doing nothing is the new making a big move. You'll see. Watch it. Yeah. This is going to pay dividends, this strategy. Nobody was saying that. People were like, oh, you don't even understand. Christie's the mastermind. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't even know. Even before, like people were saying that before she gave the tribal council speech.
Yeah. And I do think there's like a lot of people who like her because she's like a weirdo and like, people want a weirdo.
Underdog,
to
I get that.
A lot of us are weirdos, you know? And like, you know, it's fun to see someone who's like a little weird and a misfit. You know, probably Rob, like that's why people like us, you know?
Yes,
like,
it's very like relatable. Like,
Christie is unapologetically Christie. And I really, really appreciate that. She didn't buckle to the conventions of what the popular group thought. She's just herself. And that's kind of nice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I do think there's a lot of that with her as well. You know, and so like, you know, I'm okay. I'm okay with the Christie now.
I think like 99% of the people that watch that finale, us included, were very happy for her that she won. So congratulations again to Christie. It seems like a very happy ending for her and her story, Nick.
Yep. Very much so.
All right. Let's leave it at that. Go out on a high note. All right. Thanks so much to everybody who joined us live. Thank you so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And thank you to everybody who stayed with us through what I think this is our 10th week of recapping Australian Survivor, Steven.
It's been really fun. And as much as we've like grouched about it and complained, like the complaining has been fun too. And it's been like an enjoyable,
See, my wife doesn't understand that about me. It's like the complaining, I feel like that the venting is fun. When she vents about stuff, she's just like, you know, just like there's no nuance or art to it.
She's mad.
Just yelling.
She's just mad.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. For venting is fine. It really is. And and there were it was so much. There were so many great moments. There were annoying moments. You know, there were highs and lows.
Yes. Okay. We wouldn't change
a very good season. I'm very happy to have been a part of it.
Yeah, Nick, thank you very much.
Thank you for podcasting about it on behalf of all the Australian contestants and the fans. We genuinely really appreciate it.
Yeah, we made it. All right, so that's going to do it for us. Join us for when we get back to episode 7 of the Millennials and the Gen Xers on Wednesday night. This is the fourth podcast in a row I've recorded today. I recorded the Survivor voicemails earlier today. I talked to Josh Wiggler about the Wiggle Room. That's coming up. We talked about why the latest player lost with David Bloomberg. And then coming up in about an hour and change, I'll be talking about the latest episode of The Walking Dead. So jam-packed Good Sunday. Lord. This is what I get for leaving the house for a couple of days. I just get bombarded with podcasts. All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Survivor, no way.